better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Since arriving in Arkansas, Sam Pittman has not gotten the love from the national media. Whether it's Paul Feinbaum making fun of him for being emotional at that opening press conference, whether it's consistent college football list in the SEC that has him as the lowest tiered football coach, whatever it may be, he has not gotten his due. And he's got a lot to earn at this point. Hasn't coached at the Division I level, at the SEC level, at the SEC West level to this point. But, and the key word is but, there are a lot of people in the state that think he can turn it around. And one of the major reasons that is a thought is because the offensive and defensive coordinator he hired in Kendall Briles and Barry Odom. And one person, Michael Braden at Saturday Down South, noticed that. And it is actually giving Sam Pittman credit for the staff changes, he made this past offseason, the additions he brought in. Because, again, there's been a lot of negativity towards the Sam Pittman hire. But let's think about what he's done. He's quietly brought in a top 30 recruiting class in his first half year, quarter year, whatever you want to call it. He hasn't promised an SEC championship in 2021 like Lane Kiffin, no, first-year head coach. He hasn't tweeted out a noose in the 21st century like Mike Leach did over at Mississippi State. And he also hasn't talked about the Missouri way like Eli Drinkwitz over at Mizzou. He hasn't really said much, which is probably a good thing considering the state of your program right now. But according to Michael Braden on the SEC podcast, also the editor, the news editor for Saturday Down South, Arkansas has the second best group of coordinators in the SEC with Kendall Briles and Barry Odom. The second best. It's pretty high. That's pretty respectable when you look across the board at some of the coordinators and the head coaches in this conference. We're going to get into that and so much more coming up here on the Morning Rush. If you want to call or text in on the conversation, it's 877-377-6963. Always streaming live on hitthatline.com. Find our video stream, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Find us on the TuneIn app. If you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. Going to have Gary Parrish, CBS Sports, joining us at 7:15 this morning. And then Terry Mahajer, Arkansas State AD, is going to join us at 8 o'clock. I saw this list. I was pretty surprised. Braden's given Arkansas a ton of credit, second of any coordinator combination in the SEC. Yeah. That's pretty high for not two first-year. Cool. Well, Odom used to be a DC. Briles has been an OC for a while, but first year at Arkansas.
Well, and what he did, he ranked the coordinators on each side of the ball, 1 through 14, and then combined that number. So whoever had the lowest wins, and that was Florida. But it's just further validation of what we have been talking about, what we thought that – you know, what really makes us a little more comfortable with this Sam Pittman situation is who he has as his lieutenants. It's the fact that he's got experienced hands. And I found it interesting. I'm not surprised that Barry Odom is fourth. Might even be surprised he's not a little higher on that list considering he has been a head coach in this league. Were you surprised where Briles was ranked on this list? Kendall Briles?
He hasn't been in the SEC.
Right, not being in the SEC. He's been at Florida State. Doesn't have a ton. Has some being at Florida State. Doesn't have a ton of Power 5 experience as a coordinator. Yeah. Certainly as an assistant coach. He's been around the game. But I think this just further proves and it further eases our anxiety. Brings it down that Sam Pippen's going to be okay here because here's somebody else that agrees with our hopeful opinion that you've got two great coordinators, and I think there's just it's affirmation that we've been seeking.
And we can debate some of the other stuff on this list, but like you're saying, it feels good to see Arkansas on top or at the top of a list when you've seen them so consistently at the bottom. And I think these two guys, Kendall Briles, outside of the stint at Florida State, has pretty much had success everywhere he's been, whether it's FAU, whether it's Houston, whether it's Baylor. He's had some offensive success, and really it starts with them running the football. And then Barry Odom, whether it's Memphis, whether it's Mizzou, his defenses have been good, and he's played with less heralded talent, which is important because that's what you're going to get at Arkansas. You're not going to get 4 and 5 stars in here every single year. You're going to have to play with talent that doesn't necessarily stack up to some of the other talent that you'll be going against in the SEC. So you have to be really smart with your schemes, your play calling, and all that jazz. But to see them at number two, I think, again, is you've gotten so many disheartening news releases, like text, whatever, when it concerns Arkansas football and where they're ranked, how their record's going to be and stuff. So it's nice to see, as you mentioned, something positive for once.
I don't know how much we're going to have time to get back to this later in the show, but any issue, and just looking at the number ones on each side, Mike Leach, number one on the offensive side of the ball as coordinator, making Mississippi, who's got the number one coordinator and the number 14 defensive coordinator, 10th in the league. Any issue with Leach being at the top, the number one offensive mind, so to speak, in this league?
He did it a little bit at Kentucky. I can't remember how long
that's
he
been
was
a while.
OC at Kentucky. I just do remember him saying the toughest place he ever played was War Memorial Stadium. But
That's what, 20 years ago?
I think it was 2000, if I remember correctly. So, exactly 20 years ago. So, that being said, he at least has experience in the league, but the league's changed a lot since then. He was not around when the league was winning consistent national championships like it has been as of late. So, that being said, I'm a little skeptical, but the only other person I think that you could put on the number one is Dan Mullen. Because Dan Mullen's done it in Mississippi State. He looks like he's going to get it done with Kyle Trask in Florida. There's no other OC on this list that I would be comfortable with putting at number one outside of Dan Mullen and Mike Leach.
Okay, so Mullen's number two on this list. Let's skip to number three, a name that Arkansas fans will be familiar with. That is Jim Chaney at Tennessee.
And a little background on Michael. You know where he went to school?
On who?
On Michael, the guy that came up with this list.
We're Tennessee.
Tennessee. Okay. Correct. Yeah. You didn't even know. You just could guess.
But Jim Chaney's been around this league, coached obviously at Arkansas. He's been at Tennessee. He's been at Georgia. He's spent a lot of Power Five time, but multiple stops in the SEC. Chaney at number three is interesting because here's a guy that more or less got ran off, and it led to the further downturn of your program when Jim Chaney left. That led to Sam Pittman leaving a year later. And Jim Chaney, I've always thought, while he doesn't present himself always in the best manner, is still one of the better offensive minds in this league. And I think one of the reasons Tennessee is going to be on the uptick, and one of the reasons they're getting the recruits to do that. So here's a guy that you had in your fold at one time, and him and Bielema could not get on the same page.
I think Sark's a little no. Steve Sarkisian, Alabama offensive coordinator, is a little low at nine.
I thought he's way low.
I think he's probably top five. And I mean, you think about, they had the second highest scoring output in the SEC this past season. I think first in yards. So to me, I think at number nine, he needs to be up there. He's probably top five for me. But again, it's happy. I don't know if you can put Kendall Briles, because Kendall Briles has yet to coach in the SEC. Yet, I don't know if you can put him at top five, but at least he's inching into that category. Barry Odom, you certainly can make a case that he is a top five defensive coordinator in this conference.
So they have Barry Odom at four. Let's quickly look at the defensive side. Kevin Steele, number one at Auburn. Any issue with that?
No complaints.
Georgia's D.C. Lanning, I'm not sure of his first name, at number two. And then Todd Grantham, who coached with Bobby Petrino at Louisville. He's been around for a long time. In fact, was credited with a lot of Louisville success in Bobby's second stint there. He's the third-ranked coordinator, making Florida the top one on this list because they got the number two with Mullen on the offensive side, Todd Grantham at number three. So what do you think about those? And then Barry Odom at four.
I don't.
Steve Elko at five.
A&M. I couldn't tell you much about Lanning, and I'm forgetting the Michigan State head coach that was at Colorado, was at Georgia, then went to Colorado as the head coach, and now is at Michigan State. Mel Tucker. He was a tremendous DC. But yeah, we'll definitely recap this list coming up here on the program.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house, wearing number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy hog!
So tier four is where Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com college football writer, has Arkansas. And his tier four jobs are recruiting or resource restrictions that make player development a focal point, which Arkansas has. There's not a lot of high school football talent in the state of Arkansas compared to other SEC schools. Strong facilities, which Arkansas has, but an average overall infrastructure in their conferences. Limitations with administrative slash fan support. I don't think Arkansas has that. A consistent bowl team that competes for division titles. Now, at one point in time, Arkansas did that every once in a while, and especially in the Southwest Conference, that was more of a thing, not so much in the SEC. League titles and New Year's Six Bowls a few times per decade. In the past decade, you had a few of those. But that outside the administrative fan support, I think Arkansas fits a lot of those categories. But he does list Arkansas as the biggest underachiever in this tier. He feels like the Razorbacks could do more, which I think many of the fans feel like that they could do more, especially these last couple of years, Tommy.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the things he pointed out was, look at your last two coaching searches. I mean, I thought you, and we all thought up front, you kind of hit a home run with Brett Bielema, but it didn't pan out. But that was still a good hire, a guy that had won, you know, Big Ten titles and had done things.
Find me a person, find me a TV person, find me a radio person, find me a writer that said that was a bad hire.
Right.
It's unattainable.
But the search, and he was kind of not even on the radar during the search process. He was a rabbit out of the hat. Since that search, since then, in your ensuing searches, it's been a disaster. Now, Gus Malzahn entered the equation when Chad Morris ended up getting hired. That how much of that was a charade to get a raise, we don't really know. How much he was really interested in the job. The point is, the job has fallen to your third, fourth, fifth choice. That goes into the proof or the affirmation of the prestige of your position has fallen, and it's just simply about winning. Sam Pittman is at the right entry point. There's really nowhere to go but up. A lot of times jobs are about entry point. Do you come in at the right point? Whoever takes over for Saban or Dabo or any of these other programs that are having consistent success, good luck, because that's a bad entry point. Sam Pittman's got a good entry point. I know this job's not quite on the tier you want, but he can improve that. He can notch this up a tier or two in his time.
I hold the belief that, for whatever reason, Alabama fans are just under the assumption that Dabo Sweeney is going to take the Alabama job when Nick Saban leaves. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, he might take it after the next guy, but there is such an expectation from the Crimson Tide faithful that to have the same level of success that Nick Saban has established, I wouldn't want that job. I wouldn't touch that job with a 10-foot pole. And even as competent, as great as head football coach as Dabo Sweeney is, I'm not going anywhere near that job unless I'm trying to get more money out of the Clemson Tigers.
You wonder if Kirby Smart would entertain coming back there as the head coach. I mean, you just look at, and I just don't think they get far from their tree. They're either going to get a former player or a former coach, and they'd like to have one that fits both of those. And Dabo, you know, was a player there and fits that, but they like to stay within the family, as they say.
I would say the only reason that Kirby Smart would not take that job is because he's a Georgia alum. Now, if he was an Alabama alum, I would say that there's some truth to that. And someone argued the Georgia job is better than the Alabama job because of you're not competing with anyone in your state. Yeah, now, there's Georgia Tech, but it's not Auburn is not the same level as Georgia Tech.
No, and Auburn's probably, I mean, everybody comes to Atlanta to recruit. Everybody comes to Georgia to recruit. There's a ton of players within the kind of 250-mile circle around Atlanta. And Auburn comes in there, too. So, I mean, it's not like Georgia's free from competition for recruiting, but they got a great recruiting ground right there, and why would Kirby want to give that up?
Athens is, I believe, 45 to an hour away from Atlanta. I mean, that is about as close as it gets. That's when it, not only is Atlanta a great football recruiting ground, but basketball as well, which is so puzzling to me while Georgia doesn't have a good basketball team. But I would not, if I was Kirby Smart, again, as an alum of the University of Georgia, as a guy that's had success there in his first couple years, I would not give that up.
Can you imagine the insane offer Alabama, particularly, and I expect Saban to go out on a high note. I don't think he's going to limp out, you know, with losing seasons or the program on the decline. I think he'll go out on a high note when he's ready. But can you imagine the money, assuming we return to something normal compared to what we have known as normal in the next 2, 3, 5 years. Can you imagine the offer they're going to put on the table to somebody just to keep it going? I mean, their fear is it won't keep going. So their willingness to do whatever they got to do to keep the ball rolling with the way Saban's had it will be financially probably staggering for some coach to have to consider.
Might bust 10 mil.
Yeah. They may pay the next one more than they've been paying Saban just for the fear of what happens if we start losing.
And I guess it depends on how the financials shake out with the athletic departments these next couple of years. But if we get back to a point where we think that it's going to get back to, that's definitely a question that's going to arise.
They'll be negotiating out of fear, not out of, you know, not out of prudence. You know, well, does it make sense to pay any coach more than Nick Saban? No, but they may just out of the fear of taking a step backwards. So some of these coaches, while we think they got ties because of this is where they graduated or this is what they've built over here, you know, financially, Alabama may make it very tough to say no.
And that's going to cause a domino effect with the other schools to keep those coaches. Yeah. Like, they're going to have to offer.
I'm operating under some of the premise of we go back to the financial models we've had. There's no certainty about that. There's no certainty that the financial budgets, these $130, $40, $50 million budgets at the top of college football will remain. So those numbers and that idea may not work out 5 years from now when these athletic departments are trying to figure out how to operate on a third less.
When you hear the word, though, tier four in the words, not just word, what does that make you think when it comes to the football program? I would say that Arkansas has the potential to be in that tier three category. You were once were a tier one program, then you shifted into kind of the tier two, then to tier three, and now you've gotten to a point where you're tier four. That's not saying you can't get back to that point, but I think Adam Rittenberg's statement about Arkansas being the biggest underachiever in the tier four category is valid because of where you've been and where you currently are.
You know, talks about the facilities average amongst SEC schools. I mean, Arkansas's got good facilities nationally, but the arms race in the SEC is real. I found that one of the definition here, limitations with administrative and fan support. Is it really a limitation of the support of the fan base here?
Well, that's what I said. I think that's one of the things that Arkansas, most of the stuff that Rittenberg listed, yeah, Arkansas falls in that category. But I think that's one thing that you don't have. Because, again, Arkansas is the only school in this conference where you don't have a competing entity, a big-time entity within the state. I guess you could say Georgia with Georgia. But there's still, I mean, I would say there's more Georgia Tech fans in the state of Georgia than there are Arkansas State fans in the state of Arkansas.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Welcome back into the Morning Rush. Going to the phone lines, we'll welcome in Gary Parrish, host of the Gary Parrish Show, ESPN 92.9 in Memphis, Tennessee, college basketball writer and analyst for CBS Sports. Gary, appreciate you joining us this morning. Justin Smith, you're already under the impression that he's going to start for the Razorbacks this year. Why are you so high on the Indiana transfer?
I'll let Mark pick the starting lineup when the time comes. Based on the roster in place, I could certainly see him in the starting lineup, if only because he's a guy who has played real minutes, productive minutes for a nationally relevant Big Ten program. I mean, he was a double-digit scorer last season for a team that was on its way to the NCAA tournament. And so, you know, when you consider he's older, he's experienced, he's obviously gifted, I think he's going to be a big part of that Arkansas basketball team next season that certainly on paper looks like it will be in the NCAA tournament and perhaps, you know, a real challenger to make the Sweet 16 for the first time in a long, long time.
If Isaiah Joe does come back to the Razorbacks, do you think it's Sweet 16 or bust, or is that too high of expectation under Eric Musselman in year two?
Yeah, I never talk, and I know that a lot of people do, but I never talk about you have to go to a Sweet 16 or it was a bad seat, or you have to go to a Final Four or else it was a failure, because that tournament is an amazing television event. But it is also a single elimination tournament, 40-minute basketball games that can be determined by foul trouble, hot three-point shooting, any number of things. And so it is possible to have an incredible season and then not advance where your roster suggested you should advance in the bracket. The most famous example of that, just 2 years ago, when Virginia was a one seed, the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, and then loses to UMBC in the round of 64. Did Virginia have a bad season? No. Virginia had an amazing season and a terrible final game. What I always say is, I'd rather judge a team over a four-month span than over a three-week single elimination tournament. So if Isaiah Joe is back, to answer your question, and everybody else enrolls as planned, I would say Arkansas is a preseason top 25 team, and that Arkansas should be about that for the entire season and safely make the NCAA tournament. And then whatever happens in that bracket, happens in that bracket.
You also mentioned how quickly Eric Musselman has acquired transfers, and we're speaking with Gary Parrish here on the Morning Rush. Are you surprised in the last 2 years, whether it's Jimmy Witt, whether it's Justin Smith, whether it's Jalen Tate, Vance Jackson, how quickly he's been able to translate his philosophy from Nevada to Arkansas?
No, not at all. I'm a big believer in Musk. I've known him for a long, long time before he even got into college coaching, and you know, actually met him through the Dana and David Pump, the Pump brothers, who used to run the Pump and Run teams under the Adidas Grassroots banner. Musk was, I think, unemployed at the time, so out of coaching, and was working out some of the Pump and Run teams, you know, for Dana and David, so that Dana and David could sell to potential players and their families. We have a former NBA coach working our players out. And so just by coincidence, I happened to be in L.A. back then, and Musk was there, and we hit it off, and you know, I've had an incredible level of respect for him ever since. You know, I know his family, terrific people, and I'm not surprised that he's been successful in college coaching, and not surprised that he didn't completely abandon the recipe he used at Nevada when he got to Arkansas. Obviously, when you are the head coach at Arkansas, you can recruit at a different level than you can recruit at Nevada. And you should be able to recruit differently as well. There's nice high school talent within the state. You should be among the leaders, if not the leader, for every prospect in that state that you want, because you're not competing. It's one of the few states where you're not competing with another power conference program within your state. In Mississippi, for instance, if you're Mississippi State, you still got to deal with Ole Miss. In Tennessee, if you're Tennessee, you still got to deal with Memphis and Vanderbilt. In Arkansas, it is, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, but Arkansas is the deal. And so you're going to focus heavily on high school prospects, but there's real value to having older, experienced players who are, as far as sit-out transfers go, who are in your program for a year before they ever actually play a game. And I think when I looked at it on paper, Arkansas will have six eligible transfers joining the team next season. And you combine that with four top 100 prospects. Again, if you get Isaiah Joe to come back, that's a really nice roster. And it's something I think most coaches would be wise to maybe consider, the value of working the transfer market, even sit-out transfers, until that rule has changed.
Gary, you mentioned the high school talent in the state. One of the other cities that Arkansas, when it's thrived in its basketball program, is the city of Memphis. You're a graduate of Memphis. You've done radio in Memphis for quite some time. You know the basketball talent in the city of Memphis as well as anyone. How difficult is it going to be, as long as Penny Hardaway is there as the head coach of Memphis, getting high school kids?
More difficult than it would be if you weren't there. I will say that it was impossible when he got the job, because every kid that they were going to recruit, he had just got through coaching, either at East High School or with Team Penny. You know, as we get further away from those times, we get more into prospects that Penny doesn't have that kind of relationship with. It makes it a little more possible for other programs, Arkansas, Auburn, obviously Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, to come in and try to recruit these prospects. But still, you're always going to have to beat Memphis under these circumstances. Mm-hmm. With Penny in charge, you're going to have to beat Memphis to get somebody out of Memphis. I will tell you one thing that has changed the dynamics over the past 10, 15, 20 years is that once upon a time, like when Penny was a player, the best high school prospects in Memphis were at city schools. They were at Melrose or Treadwell or Hamilton or East High School. And what has happened, and this is a good thing, to be clear. But what has happened over the past 10 to 15 years is that the best basketball prospects in the city get recruited, for lack of a better verb, to the private school. So you have Kennedy Chandler, a five-star point guard at Briarcrest Christian. You had Musa Cisse, a five-star big at Lausanne Collegiate School. So it makes it easier to come in and get the kids after they go to a private school, because some parents have been hesitant about sending their, quote, private school kids back to the University of Memphis. I had one parent of a prominent prospect tell me once upon a time, I worked like crazy to get him out of the city. Why would I send him right back into the city? And so that's just a different dynamic that Penny has to fight against. You know, that once kids get into the suburbs, or at least into the better schools on paper, they are suddenly candidates to be college students at better academic institutions than the University of Memphis. And so that's something Penny has to work against. But still, Penny Hardaway recruiting for the University of Memphis is always going to be a factor with Memphis kids to some degree.
Speaking with Gary Parrish, college basketball writer for CBS Sports on the Morning Rush. On that note, we know that within the city limits of Memphis, you can build a Division I basketball program, a prominent Division I basketball program. There was speculation a couple weeks ago when Arkansas had yet to release a prominent non-conference opponent, ended up being Oklahoma and Tulsa these next couple years. Let me sell you on the idea of Arkansas-Memphis renewing that rivalry. Now, it was not going to happen under Cal when he was there, but Cal's long gone. Penny would like to reach into Arkansas, too. You just mentioned the high school talent in this state. What about the idea of Muss and Penny rekindling that Arkansas-Memphis connection and playing every other year?
You don't have to sell me on it. I love it. Like you mentioned, I'm a graduate of the University of Memphis. I grew up on Memphis, Arkansas. Like, I grew up on Nolan Richardson, you know, more often than not beating the crap out of the Tigers. I remember Todd Day and you know, Corey Brewer and all of those guys. And so I have fond memories of the Memphis, Arkansas rivalry. And I think it's something that's sensible for a couple of different reasons. A, I know that coaches get it in their head for whatever reason that they need to play a quote unquote national schedule, but I'm not really sure how important that is. Arkansas could play Seton Hall, I guess, and that would get them into the New York area, and that would qualify as a national opponent. But like, did any Arkansas fan care about beating Seton Hall? I mean, it's just one of a million non-league games that would show up on ESPN2. And I would say the same thing about Memphis, by the way. But, like, Arkansas playing Memphis, that matters to people in Arkansas. Memphis playing Arkansas, that matters to people in Memphis. And why? It's because if you are an Arkansas fan, they're particularly one that lives on the east side of the state, there's a good chance you are friends with or work with a Memphis fan or a Memphis graduate. One of my best friends is an Arkansas grad. My CPA is an Arkansas grad. These games are always more fun when you have a relationship with people who are connected to the other school. How many Arkansas fans know a Seton Hall graduate? How many Arkansas fans, Memphis fans even, you know what the Seton Hall campus looks like or can name the Seton Hall coach?
It's Kevin Willard, right?
It is Kevin Willard, okay. The correct answer. But I'm a big believer in, like, playing games that your fans want to circle on the calendar. And so I've always thought that, you know, speaking for Memphis specifically, you know, play Ole Miss, play Tennessee, play Arkansas. Those three are the biggest three, I think, in terms of regionals. And then for Arkansas, I'll let Arkansas fans figure out who that is. But, you know, maybe Texas is one of them. But Memphis is certainly one of them. So I think it works on that level. And then the other thing that I think you're going to see more and more often is that because of the pandemic, athletic departments are just going to have not as much money as they used to have. And so it didn't matter before if you wanted to, you know, to get a charter plane and fly your basketball team to California to play one game. Like, you got more money than you know what to do with if you're an SEC school. But everybody's budgets are taking a hit right now. And so what I think you might see athletic directors plead with their men's basketball coaches to do is, like, if there's a bus ride to be had, let's take the bus ride. And I know it's a long bus ride between Fayetteville and Memphis, But it is possible. You could do it if you wanted to. And I think what you'll find is more and more men's basketball teams saying, why do we need to get on a plane when there's a reasonable, comparable, and exciting opponent that is much closer to our campus? And that, then, and so Memphis, Arkansas could maybe fit that criteria as well. Simply put, I'm all for it, big believer in it, and I'd love to see Musselman-Penny get that thing worked out.
Gary, one of the players right now that Penny Hardaway, Eric Musselman, John Calipari would love to have is Cade Cunningham. And we'll talk about the Oklahoma State stuff coming up. But what do you see Cade Cunningham doing with his future on the basketball court?
I thought it was interesting after it was announced last Friday that Oklahoma State's going to be banned from the 2021 tournament. Almost immediately, Mike Boynton, the Oklahoma State coach, was on the record saying, I'll help Cade do whatever he wants to do. If he wants to go to another college, I'll work with him on that. If he wants to go to the G League program, I'll work with him on that. In other words, it seemed like Mike was almost acknowledging he's not coming to Oklahoma State under these circumstances. Right, he's gone. And so Kentucky was the other school heavily involved with him throughout the process. And I know Kentucky's roster is now loaded, but because some Kentucky fans have said, well, you know, we've got A, B, and C. We don't need Cade Cunningham now. It's like, what are you talking? That's like saying you don't need LeBron James now. Like, it doesn't, like, if you can have Giannis on your roster, it doesn't matter who else is on your roster. You'll take him and figure it out. And Cade Cunningham is exactly that guy. I'm, to be clear, I'm not comparing him to LeBron James or Giannis, but for college basketball purposes, he's that guy. I mean, he's the number one prospect in America, projected to be the number one pick in the 2021 NBA draft. And so everybody will make a spot for him if he decides he wants to go there. And then, of course, just training in that G League program is another option. I guess I'd bottom line it this way. I don't know what he's going to do. The only thing I feel certain saying is that he's not going to go to Oklahoma State, because the truth is, to the extent any of these young people still dream about playing college basketball, it is mostly tied to going to the NCAA tournament and competing on that stage. And once that in early June has been ripped away from you as an opportunity, it seems, I don't know, illogical to go enroll at that school and play what amounts to 30 whatever meaningless basketball games with a path to nowhere available to you. I'd rather, if I were Cade Cunningham, go anywhere else that I felt like I would at least have a chance to play in the NCAA tournament, compete for the national title, and I suspect he'll do that or join that G League program.
We're talking college basketball with Gary Parrish, ESPN 92.9 in Memphis here on The Morning Rush. Gary, you've written about it. You've talked about it. Oklahoma State, it seems like it's just going to be the crack door of this FBI investigation. If you're a coach right now in college basketball, pick one. Who do you think should be the most scared of what's to come with this investigation?
Bill Self, Sean Miller, you know, those. I think the first thing you got to understand is what Oklahoma State was accused of doing. And it really wasn't anything other than it had an assistant coach on staff who accepted about $20,000 in bribes to funnel student athletes to financial advisors once they decided to leave Oklahoma State. In other words, the allegation was never that Lamont Evans, the Oklahoma State assistant, went out and used money to buy a recruit to enhance the Oklahoma State roster. It was merely to influence a business decision after these players left. In other words, Oklahoma State gained no roster advantage whatsoever from what Lamont Evans did. And it led to one level one violation, and still they get a postseason ban. So if that's the starting line, and I should be clear, the idea that the NCAA follows precedent is untrue. You know, they've been wildly inconsistent forever about the cases they pursue and how they punish people who violate the rules. But if you believe that this time is going to be different, and I personally do, then Oklahoma State is about the least of the notice of allegations that have already been sent. And we if you compare it to the allegations we know exist against the Arizona program, they're really not comparable. At Arizona, they are accused of using money to buy recruits. At Kansas, they are accused of using money to buy recruits. So if I were Arizona or Kansas, Bill Self or Sean Miller, I'd be real nervous right now, because if what Oklahoma State did got a one-year postseason ban, you got to think Kansas, Arizona, at the very least, are going to get two, maybe even three, including suspensions for their head coaches. And then at Auburn, like, the same thing that happened at Oklahoma State happened at Auburn. Like, it's basically the exact same thing. So you got to think Auburn's headed for a one-year postseason ban. USC, same thing that happened to Oklahoma State happened there. You got to think USC is headed for a one-year postseason ban. South Carolina, same thing that happened to Oklahoma State happened at South Carolina with the same person. You got to think they're headed for a postseason ban. So I've had a lot of fans since I wrote a column last Friday say, I'll believe it when I see it. And I guess I can't argue against that. You have historical reasons to be skeptical, but I can just tell you from talking to people who work in Indianapolis, they know that this has to be different. They know they can't let this stuff fly. That's why they hit Oklahoma State the way they hit Oklahoma State. And basically everybody else involved is probably going to get hit hard.
Gary, let me top off the interview with this, with a food question. I've been through Memphis many a times. I know you're originally from Lake Horn. I've been to Memphis Barbecue Company. I've had Commissary. I've had Central. I've had Rendezvous. I've had a ton of fantastic barbecue places in Memphis. For your money, what's the best one, man?
Well, I have to say Memphis Barbecue Company, because I have a business relationship with Memphis Barbecue Company. And it really is terrific. For people who don't know, it is owned by a woman who is the first woman ever inducted into the Barbecue Hall of Fame, who is a seven-time world champion. So as I say on the air, and this is factually correct, there are a lot of great places in Memphis, in the Memphis area, to get incredible barbecue. But there's only one place to get world championship barbecue, and that is Memphis Barbecue Company. So let's rephrase the question and say, what is my second favorite barbecue spot in the Memphis area?
There
and I
go.
Think I would go with Central Barbecue. The original location on Central Avenue, not far from Christian Brothers University. Like, I've been going there my entire life. And listen, the Rendezvous is great because of the scene. And it's like, the food is terrific as well. Like, Memphians tend to roll their eyes at the Rendezvous as a tourist place, but that doesn't mean it's not awesome. So I enjoy the Rendezvous. I enjoy the Commissary. I enjoy Interstate Barbecue, the Barbecue Shop. I could name 50 really nice places, but my second favorite after Memphis Barbecue Company, probably Central Barbecue. It's really first class, and also like a casual, really laid back environment. So it's nice. If people are ever in town, certainly check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Gary Parrish, host of the Gary Parrish Show on ESPN 92.9 in Memphis, also college basketball writer for CBS Sports. Gary, appreciate you taking some time this morning to join the Morning Rush.
My pleasure. Take care, man. Thank you.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
All right, it is a What's Your Beef Wednesday, so if you want to call or text in, it's 877-377-6963.
What is wrong with you?
Hey, I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today
to simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bears and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
It is a What's Your Beef Wednesday. Real excited about this one. Tommy, I know you already touched on yours a little bit this morning, and I'll let you get back into it. You're ticked off that you feel like the owners are just assumed that they should take the brunt of the financial punishment and that no one else should have. And I'm talking about the MLB owners.
And I just hear these discussions about the resumption of baseball, and I'm not the biggest baseball fan. College football is a sport I am most excited about than probably any other sport. But I want to see baseball back. I want to see sports back in some kind of normalcy. And the NBA is marching in that direction. Their players, their owners found a common direction they could go financially to make this work. Their TV deals are vastly different, though, than baseball's. But right now I hear a lot of conversation, a lot of that the owners, because they're billionaires, should just eat it. You know, that's essentially what you're hearing at the end of the day, because somehow they have money tree. I mean, it's the old thing, mom and dad, you say, well, you think I got a money tree in the backyard? I understand they're billionaires, but they can't bear the brunt of all the losses. They take all the risk. They take all the liability. They take on all the overhead. The players are responsible for themselves and themselves alone. They're trying to come up with a prorated salary decrease, decrease in the number of games. But with the uncertainty in the financial model, both sides are going to have to give. The owners are going to lose no matter what. They play all the games. They're still going to lose. They're going to lose the most in this financially. The players have a lot at stake, and I get that. But I get weary of the conversation that because they're billionaires, they should just eat it. That's not how they became billionaires, is by making stupid financial decisions. And I just get I just get weary of that, what I think is an unreasonable conversation.
So what should happen?
They've got to find a way to split what revenue's on the table. And if they split that 50-50, that sounds fair in principle. The problem becomes, well, what is the revenue? How do we count that? Does that count all the parking? Does that count all the concessions? Are there going to be concessions? Will there be people allowed in? However you come up with some model to transparently calculate the revenue. What kind of TV money you getting here? What kind of souvenir sales? I mean, the owners have a lot of money coming in from a lot of places around a ballpark. To me, if you could throw all that money in a pot and then divide it up somehow between players and owners, that sounds fair.
They're not going to open their books.
Well, have they said they won't? Who said they won't?
Good luck getting that to
happen. Well, who said they wouldn't?
Okay.
I'm asking you. You come in with this smirk on your face, like, well, they're you know.
I mean, I didn't say it like that, but they're. I mean,
yeah, you did.
That's just, they're not going to happen.
I'm just saying.
Okay, then do you think it's going to happen? Do you think they're going to open?
No, I think baseball will not happen this year.
Okay, then why are you getting mad at me for saying they're not going to open their books?
But who keeps turning? I mean, the players keep turning down their opportunity to return to the field.
That's not what I'm saying, Tommy. What I just said was the owners aren't going to open their books, and you said that. You looked at me like I was had an aneurysm coming out of my head. Am I not right when I say that?
No, I don't think you're 100%. To say they would never do it, I don't think is 100% right.
Okay, then are they going? Do you think they will?
I think that's the direction they need to head to. I mean, but
I agree with you there, but will they?
They need to put whatever money comes in on the table and figure out some kind of division.
Okay.
That they can agree upon.
And I'll ask
now, how you divide the players' money up, I don't know. That leave that up to the players. What Mike Trout gets versus some rookie in the league, I don't know.
Okay. Again, comes back to the are they going to, do you think, in your opinion, will they open up their books?
Yes.
Okay.
Because who has, but here's the other thing. Is there any way for the billionaire owners to make any money this year?
You said they'd be better off without a season.
I think financially they may be better off to never open the gates. Now, long term, that's for 1 year, looking at this year's P&L. Long term, it hurts the game so bad, and fans may not come back. The risk of not opening long term is too great.
Just not short term.
Short term, I don't think there's any way for the owners to win. But that's not my beef. My beef is with the idea that, well, they're billionaires, they should just eat the crap sandwich.
Okay.
Well, that's just nonsense. That's just nonsense.
Okay.
That's my beef.
All right. JT and Hot Springs text in. His beef is Sammy Sam and Elmer Fudd not having guns anymore on the new Looney Tunes, which will be on HBO Max. So, yeah, that's definitely something that people have been griping on. Before I get to mine, let's go to the phone lines where PA and Texarkana has a beef. PA, you go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just listening to the conversation you had with the Arkansas State Red Wolf athletic director, and well, he seemed to have a high opinion of himself, but nevertheless,
What do you mean by that? Because I didn't pick that up from
the way he talked to Ty. It's like how you wouldn't understand. You didn't play. Well, yeah, Ty can understand because he's a fan of the University of Arkansas. He's an alumni. I'm a big fan of the University of Arkansas. I'm an alumni. I mean, don't come with that you wouldn't understand stuff because we didn't play. I mean, you know. I really thought that was popping down his nose. And he also, his hair's on fire to get wanting to play Arkansas football right now because he knows we've been down for 7 years.
Yeah, I thought he was very restrained in those answers. Yeah, he would play tomorrow if he could. Yeah.
Exactly. And I know he's a good guy. And I just thought there were several backhanded things he said about the U of A. You know, without saying it, he said it without saying it. And maybe that's just my sensitivity. But I thought he treated Ty terribly. And,
Ty, did you think he treated you terribly?
How do you know I wouldn't understand? Mm. You know, that kind of deal. And I'm just taking up for Ty a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, he needs
it. A little soft spot in my heart for Ty.
Thank you, sir. PA, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it.
Did you think you were mistreated? Did you think you were talked down to?
Well, you talked down me a lot worse than Terry just did.
And I will continue to do so.
So maybe I just block it out at this point. PA, I think he brought up a good point that I don't have the perspective of playing. And I think I make that on a daily basis, that I didn't play, I didn't coach, I don't have that. And Tommy, you don't have that background either. You've ref, but there's a difference in that. Yeah. So I think there's a background that obviously he has that I don't have, but I also think I have the perspective of being an Arkansas alum. He's an A-State alum. He played for A-State. I brought up the point time and time again when it comes to this debate. Should Arkansas State play Arkansas in football? And you know what? Terry brought up some good points, and if you haven't listened to the interview, you can go to hitthatline.com. We'll put out some clips coming up after the program. But to me, as fun as an atmosphere would be to see Arkansas State, whether it's in Fayetteville, whether it's in Jonesboro, whether it's in Little Rock, to me, that's not enough. One single game or two single games is not enough to put them on the schedule in the year, because Arkansas has a lot more to lose than they have to game out. Is that a fair assessment? They have a lot more to lose if they...
Well, tell me what Arkansas gains other than they reduce some travel expenses. Tell me what Arkansas gains in the relationship in football particularly.
And that's the question I posed to him, and he said he kept going back to good. And listen, he's not wrong. That would be a fantastic, phenomenal atmosphere. But to me, that's not enough. PA, again, I appreciate you sticking up for me. I didn't think his comments were that directed at me, but you took it that way. But as always, appreciate your call. Always enjoying from hearing from PA.
There's a big difference, though. There's a big difference between Tommy and Terry, though, because he pays you. he can do what he wants.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Great point. All right, I'll get into my beef.
Keep reminding him of that too, Jenkins.
My beef is with you, Matt Jenkins, every single time we have played basketball these last couple weeks, you have always made an excuse for not you're going to play. Because remember, you got on the... You're going to wait your turn. Give me 30 seconds on this. Because on this very radio show, you said you were a better shoe than I am.
I did.
And then since then, it's, I didn't bring my shoes. Oh, I'm doing a podcast tonight. Oh, I don't feel good. Oh, WWE's on tonight. Oh, I'm going to eat with my buddies, Ty. You have yet to even participate. And so I'm wondering, similar to my buddy Bart Pullman, who time and time again, when we would go play basketball, hey, Bart, come play with me and Sawyer tonight. No, I got this, I got that, blah, 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 blah. I'm wondering if
he has an extensive social calendar.
Are you done yet?
You can even...
Your 30 seconds is up.
Man, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, you need to take the bass out of your voice when you talk to me like that. That's number one, or whatever bass you do have in your voice. Second of all, every excuse I've gave you has been quite valid, in my opinion. WWE is a great excuse.
I mean, these are wrestling podcasts. You're
absolutely right. So, but I have made excuses, and I will get out there and play with you.
Hang on. Let me officiate this. Are they excuses or are they reasons?
Both.
They can't be both. Are they excuses or a reason? Are you putting off basketball competition with Ty because you think you will lose, or do you have legitimate reasons?
They're legit. They are legit.
All right.
I do a podcast on Tuesday.
I don't want to misquote you. To be clear, the reason is a wrestling podcast.
Yes.
All right. Just being clear.
Yes.
Okay.
So I like talking about wrestling.
If we play either tonight or tomorrow, are you going to come up with another excuse, or are you actually going to play?
Put him in the box.
I'll keep thinking of one if you keep talking to me with that bass in your voice.
He has no bass.
He has no
bass.
I still talk like I'm 12 years old.
He doesn't even have it available.
My voice cracks when I get excited like it is now. So I think we're going to play tonight or tomorrow. I'm not 100%. It was actually nice and windy yesterday.
What's going on tonight?
I ain't nothing going on tonight.
So you can play tonight?
Yes, I can play tonight. He hadn't asked me yet.
You heard it here. I don't know. We haven't decided yet.
Y'all can just do a little one-on-one, you know.
Just know if I do play, and I've told him this too, I'm not in the best shape in the world.
Boy, he has more excuse making.
Here they come.
No, that is an excuse. I'll give you that.
But what's that got to do with shooting? You said you were a better shooter.
I am. I'll out shoot him any day of the week.
You don't have to be in great shape to be a good shooter.
I'll stay in the short corner every time.
All right.
Around the five.
That's my beef. My beef's only going to be amplified if by the end of this week you have not played.
Well, we should have a resolution by tomorrow, right? Because you have no excuse tonight. Is there any reason you couldn't play tonight?
There is wrestling tonight, but I'll give it up for you.
And there's a basketball court about half a mile that way. We could literally go after the show and do it right now if you want to do this. You really want to solve this. Oh, man.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.